आज जो सब्जेक्ट आपके लिए लेकर आए हैं वो है फिजिक्स, और हम बात करेंगे इलास्टिक प्रॉपर्टीज ऑफ सॉलिड्स के बारे में। और संपूर्ण जानकारी के लिए हमारे साथ लाइन पे बनी हुई हमारी एक्सपर्ट डॉक्टर नीतू अग्रवाल जी, असिस्टेंट प्रोफेसर फिजिक्स डिपार्टमेंट, दौलत राम कॉलेज यूनिवर्सिटी ऑफ दिल्ली से। मैम आपका बहुत बहुत स्वागत है हमारे साथ।
थैंक यू। टूडे वी आर गोइंग टू स्टार्ट चैप्टर 8 फ्रॉम सीनियर सेकेंडरी फिजिक्स। दिस चैप्टर इज अबाउट इलास्टिक प्रॉपर्टीज ऑफ सॉलिड्स। ओके, सो बिफोर वी प्रोसीड वी रिकॉल द इफेक्ट ऑफ फोर्स ऑन अ बॉडी। वी नो दैट व्हेन अ फोर्स इज अप्लाइड ऑन अ बॉडी देन द बॉडी मे अंडरगो डिस्प्लेसमेंट डिपेंडिंग ऑन द अमाउंट ऑफ फोर्स दैट वी हैव अप्लाइड। नाउ अपार्ट फ्रॉम प्रोड्यूसिंग अ डिस्प्लेसमेंट, द फोर्स अप्लाइड ऑन अ बॉडी मे ऑल्सो चेंज इट्स शेप और साइज। फॉर एग्जाम्पल, when we apply a suitable force say on a spring, then we see that the shape and the size of the spring changes. And there is one more point to note here, that when we remove this force that we had applied on this spring, when we remove this force, the spring tries to regain its original shape or size. Okay, so this was one example when we had applied the force on a body and it was changing its shape and size, and it was trying to regain its original shape when the force was removed. Let us take another example. When we apply the force on, say, a modeling clay or a putty, when we apply the force on this clay or putty, then the body, then this putty or the clay changes its shape or size. However, when we remove this force, it do not regain its original shape after the removal of the force. So we have seen that there are some bodies which tries to regain their original shape and size when the force, applied force, is removed. However, there are some bodies which do not do so. This behavior of the object depends on the properties of matter, depends on a very important property of matter, that is termed as elasticity. Isi behavior ko elasticity kehte hain, aur isi ke bare mein hum aaj aur janenge. Now, to understand, before we understand the elastic property of matter, let us understand that why do we need to understand the elastic properties of matter. See, this has got immense importance. We use this property to find out the strength of beams, for example, when we are constructing any building or the bridges or the ropeways. We also require to understand the elastic property of matter when we, for example, are trying to making, say, aeroplane bodies, where we require a material which is light, however, which needs to be very strong. Similarly, say, while we are looking for a material for making artificial limbs, which again needs to have a material which is light yet very strong, we need to understand, for all these reasons, the elastic properties of a material. So basically, we need this to understand that how the forces act to deform different solid bodies. So how do we understand elastic property of matter? To understand elastic properties of matter in detail, we begin with understanding the molecular theory of matter. So this is a very important theory, molecular theory of matter. See, we know that matter is made up of atoms and molecules. These atoms or molecules of which the matter is made up of, they are bonded together due to the presence of some interaction forces present inside. These interaction forces, they are termed as intermolecular forces. Now, if we are talking about forces, we have to talk about the magnitude as well as the nature of these forces. So the nature of and the magnitude of these intermolecular forces, it varies as a function of intermolecular separation between the molecules. So let us understand that how these intermolecular forces varies as a function of intermolecular separation. To understand this, let us consider two molecules. Now, when the separation between the two molecules in a solid is large, in any material, when the separation between the molecules is large, then the force between these molecules is attractive and weak. When we keep on decreasing the separation, when we decrease the separation, the net force of attraction, the net force which was there, which was attractive and weak, that net force of attraction increases up to a particular value. And then beyond this, by further decreasing the intermolecular separation, by further decreasing the separation between the two molecules, the interaction force becomes repulsive. So, for example, if you want to look at the graph of this intermolecular force versus intermolecular separation, you can refer to figure 8.1 of your book. And this will tell you that how does this intermolecular forces changes as a function of intermolecular separation. And it is this which classifies the material into solid, liquid, or gas. So what happens? In solids, the molecules are close to each other. They are this close that the intermolecular separation, that the intermolecular force that exists between them, that used to be attractive and very large. And due to this, the molecules are almost fixed at their respective position in the solids. It also accounts for why a solid has a definite shape. When we talk about liquids, then in liquids, the intermolecular separation is slightly high as compared to solids, and due to which the attractive force between them is, between the molecules is weak, still attractive. Since the attractive force is weak, so the molecules, they are comparatively free to move inside the liquid, and that is why the liquid takes the shape of the container in which you keep it. This explains it. Similarly, for the case of gases, the intermolecular separation is significantly large. The separation between the molecules, this is significantly large. And due to this, the molecular forces is extremely weak. They are almost negligible. Due to this, the molecules of gas are almost free to move inside the container, and it takes all of the volume of the container in which you keep the gas. Well, so basically what we have done till now, we have understood that there is the molecular theory of attraction, and it explains that the different forces, that the intermolecular forces that exist inside a solid, inside a material, say solid, liquid, or gas. Now this, the same intermolecular forces of attraction, the presence of this intermolecular forces of attraction also explains the property of elasticity, which we just began with understanding. So let us see, how do we explain the elasticity of solids in terms of intermolecular forces. So as we have learned that in a solid, each atom or a molecule is surrounded by neighboring atoms or molecules, and they stay in a stable equilibrium position. All these atoms, they stay in a stable equilibrium position due to the presence of intermolecular forces. When an external force is applied, because we were trying to deform the body, so when an external force is applied, the atoms are displaced from their equilibrium position. Not only the atoms are displaced from their equilibrium position, their interatomic distance also changes. Since the interatomic distance changes, so the magnitude of the intermolecular forces, they also changes. Now, if in the deformation the separation increases beyond the equilibrium separation, there was some equilibrium separation, and now when you have done the deformation, then this separation has changed. If the separation has increased, then the attractive forces are developed. And if the separation is decreased, then a very strong repulsive forces are developed. And in both these cases, these attractive or repulsive forces that has got developed because you have changed the position of the atoms from their equilibrium position, these forces are known as restoring forces. And in both these cases, they try to drive the atom to their original position. So this restoring mechanism in solids is easy to visualize if we try to visualize this using a spring ball system. For example, in a solid, if you consider all the atoms to be replaced with, say, ball in a model, and you replace all the intermolecular forces with the spring, then this ball spring system, in this ball spring system, if we try to displace any ball from its equilibrium position, the spring will try to bring back the ball to its original position. The similar thing happens in the solids. So this is how we explain the elasticity. The property of elasticity has got origin in the presence of intermolecular forces in the solids. The related experiments on this were performed by English physicist Robert Hooke. And in around 1676, he presented his law of elasticity, which is known as Hooke's law, which is a very important law associated with the property of elasticity. So we'll know about the Hooke's law. Before that, there are two very important terms to understand: the elastic material and the plastic material. So what is elastic and the plastic bodies? In the beginning of the discussion, we started with considering a spring system and a putty system, for example. So those bodies which regains its original state completely on removal of the deforming force, applied external force, those bodies are termed as perfectly elastic bodies. On the other hand, the putty-like bodies, which completely retain its modified shape after the application of the force, those bodies which completely retain its modified form or shape even on removing the deforming force, and they show no tendency to regain their original position, original shape, those bodies are termed as perfectly plastic bodies, zero elasticity. In practice, however, the behavior of all bodies lie in between these two limits of perfectly elastic and perfectly plastic. So before we understand that what is the relation between the external force that has applied and the deformation produced in the body that is given by Hooke's law, we begin with understanding how the forces are applied to deform a body. So this concept is known as, physics-wise, this is known as the concept of stress. So we begin now with the concept of stress. What is stress? When an external force is applied on a body, then in the presence of deformation, because the deformation will take place when you have applied external force, during the process of deformation, the internal restoring forces are developed in the body. We have just seen. Now, these internal restoring forces, number one, they oppose the deforming forces. Number two, the internal restoring force acting per unit area of the cross section of the deformed body is termed as stress. I'm repeating again, the magnitude of internal restoring force acting per unit area of the cross section of the body on which you were applying the deforming force, that is known as stress. So for example, if the magnitude of deforming force that you have applied on the body is F, and this force is acting on the area A of the body, then the stress will be given as the ratio of restoring force, which will be same as the deforming force, F, upon A, the area on which this force is acting. So stress will be F upon A. So since this stress is also a force, this is a restoring force, as we said, so this is measured in the units of Newton per meter square. The SI units, this is measured in terms of Newton per meter square. Now, having understood stress, there are broadly three ways in which object or solid may change its dimension when the external force acts on it. Depending on this, the stress may be the stress that is acting on the body, that may be number one, longitudinal, number two, normal stress, and number three, shearing stress. Let us see what we are saying. There are three kinds of stress. Number one, longitudinal, normal, and shearing stress. So what is longitudinal stress? If the deforming forces are along the length of the body, then the stress so produced is termed as longitudinal stress. So how do we explain it? For example, you consider a cylindrical body, a long cylindrical body. If you stretch the two ends, or if you apply forces on the two ends of the cylinder in the outward direction, then this is longitudinal stress, because it is acting along the length of the cylinder. Even if you compress the two ends of the cylinder, then also this kind of force is a longitudinal force, because again it is acting along the length of the cylinder. The previous case, when you were stretching the two ends of the cylinder, this is known as tensile longitudinal stress. And the latter case, when you compress, when you apply the force in the inward direction on the two ends, when you compress the cylinder, then this kind of longitudinal stress is termed as compressive stress. Okay, so we have learned that what is longitudinal stress? If the deforming force that you had applied, that is acting along the length of the body, then the stress so produced, the restoring force so produced, is termed as longitudinal stress. Okay, so this is one way we can apply a force to a body. The other way is what is termed as normal stress. So what is normal stress? If the deforming forces are applied uniformly and normally. Normally means perpendicular to all of the surface of the body. If the deforming forces are applied uniformly and normally all over the surface of the body, so that this application of uniform and normal force is changing the volume without changing the shape of the body, then the stress so produced is known as normal stress. Okay, so this creates a change in the volume of the body, but it does not overall changes the shape of the body, because you are applying it uniformly all over the body and also perpendicular to each surface. So this kind of stress is known as normal stress. Again, the units will be same, Newton per meter square, and this stress can as well be calculated by calculating the force per unit area that is acting normally on the body. The third kind of stress is termed as shearing stress. Okay, so what we have learned? We have learned longitudinal stress when the stress is acting along the length of the body. When the stress is acting all over uniformly, then this is known as normal stress. However, there is the third way also. How? For example, take your book and you apply a force in the tangential direction on one of the top of your book. So because the bottom of your book is touching the ground, or say the table, and you are applying a force in the tangential direction along the top of the book, so your book will slightly be displaced, the top will slightly be displaced as compared to the bottom. This deforming force, the restoring force developed in reaction to this deforming force is termed as shearing stress. So what? If the deforming forces act tangentially or parallel to the surface, so that the shape of the body changes without change in the volume. The volume of the book has not changed, right, when you are applying this force, for example, in the example which we have taken. So If the deforming forces act tangentially or parallel to the surface so that the shape of the body changes without change in the volume, the stress is termed as shearing stress. Okay, so these are the three kind of stress that we talk about. Now, when the stress is developed in a body, then what happens? So with these examples, with these three kind of stress that you just learned, you must have also realized that when the stress is there on the body, then this deforming force will produce a change in the dimension of the body. For example, when you had applied a tangential stress on your book, there was some change in the dimension of the book. It has now gone, instead of a cuboid kind of shape, it has now changed to something else. So it produces, the stress produces the change in the dimensions of the body. So in general, how do we, this change in the dimension of the body due to the reason that you have applied a stress on it is termed as strain. This term is, in physics, this term is known as strain. So what is a strain? Strain is defined as the change in the dimension, be it length or shape or volume, per unit dimensions of the body. Very important, per unit dimensions of the body. So basically, the strain is the ratio of the change in the dimension and the original dimension in which the change has taken place. And now, since we understood that there are three kinds of stress, so depending on the kind of stress that we have applied, the strains are also of three types. One, the linear strain, you may relate it with the longitudinal stress applied. Number two, the volume strain, you may relate it with the normal stress that you have learned. And the shearing strain, corresponding to the shearing stress that you have learned. So there are three types of strain. Number one, linear. Number two, volume. Number three, shearing strain. So let us see what is linear strain. So to understand linear strain, let us consider the example using a cylindrical body. So it's a long cylindrical body. And if we apply the force on the two ends of the cylinder, then the length of the cylinder from L, it changes to, say, L plus delta L. So what is the change in the length that has taken place? The delta L length has changed. The change in the length is delta L. Now, since strain is defined as the ratio of changing length versus the original length, the linear strain is defined as the change in length versus original length. So in this case, the linear strain will be equal to delta L upon L. So this is linear strain, corresponding to the longitudinal stress that you have applied to a, say, cylindrical body along the length of the cylinder. The second kind of strain that we should understand is the volume strain. So I told you that volume strain corresponds to the normal stress that you have applied. So what? Let us recall what was volume stress. What was this normal stress that you have applied? That you have applied the force, deforming force, all over the body uniformly and normally. So if on application of a uniform pressure, say delta P, the volume of the body that was originally V, capital V for example, has now changed to capital V plus delta V. Oh, so there is, what is this kind of situation? The situation is there is some body in which there are some internal pressure. Due to this internal pressure, the volume of the body has changed from V to V plus delta V. So the change in the volume that has taken place is delta V versus the original volume, that is capital, that is V. So what is volume strain? The volume strain is the ratio of change in volume versus original volume, that is delta V upon V in this case. This is volume strain. The third kind of strain that we should understand is the shearing strain. So as we have, for example, tried to understand this with the help of the example of a book, that for example, you are applying a force on the top of the book so that your book, one end, one plane of your book, for example, the left plane of your book has now shifted by some angle when you do so. So when the deforming forces are tangential, the shearing strain is given by the angle through which the plane, through which the line perpendicular to the fixed plane is turned. For example, the plane of your book, the left plane of your book has got slightly turned. That is why this is no more a cuboid. This has kind of become a parallelogram. So the angle through which it has got shifted will give you what is the shearing strain produced in the body. So, for example, when you apply a tangential stress, then delta x is the displacement in the x direction that has taken place perpendicular y distance away from the point of application of the force. Then your theta, your tan theta, if you calculate, will be equal to delta x upon y. Since this theta is small, so you can approximate tan theta is same as theta, which is the strain, the shearing strain. So that is why tan theta, or now theta, will be given as delta x upon y, and this gives you the shearing strain that has produced in the body. Now, in all these cases, all the three cases, the linear strain, that was delta L upon L for a cylindrical body, the volume strain, that was delta V upon V for a body with volume V, the change in the volume has taken place, or for the shearing strain, which has got a change in one dimension due to the change in the other direction. In all these three cases, do you realize that this is the ratio of same kind of quantities? That is why strain has got no units. It's a unitless quantity. Okay, so this is the concept of stress and strain in terms of the elastic properties of the body. Having understood this concept of stress and strain, let us see how does the strain take place in a metallic wire, for example, when you apply the stress. So let us consider a metallic wire of uniform cross section, so that we don't have to bother about that something else is happening at the cross section also. We are just looking at the what changes in the length of this metallic wire taking place when we are trying to apply the stress. So what we are considering? We are considering a metallic wire of uniform cross section, and this is subjected to a load. We have attached some load to it, and we will keep on increasing this load, so that we will keep on increasing the stress on this wire, and we will note that what changes, what is the strain produced in the wire, what changes in the dimensions are taking place, how fast, how slow, as a function of increasing the load. So if we plot this, that if we keep on the, so what we are plotting the graph of stress versus strain when we are increasing the load on a metallic wire of a uniform cross section. If we plot the graph of stress versus strain, if we study this graph, we see that in the beginning the strain uniformly increases when you increase the stress. The strain linearly increases when you increase the stress. This region where the strain is linearly increasing as a function of the stress is termed as the elastic region. Okay, so in the beginning, when you were increasing the stress, the strain was linearly increasing. Beyond a certain point, this change no more remained linear. It becomes comparatively slow, and this region is termed as the plastic region. And in this plastic region, there will be a point beyond which, if you keep on applying the stress, the metallic wire will break. So this is known as the breaking point. So broadly, this plot of stress versus strain has got the following important regions to understand. Number one, the region of proportionality. What is the region of proportionality? When it is the region that where when you were increasing the load, the stress was linearly or proportionally increasing to the strain was linearly or proportionally increasing, and the body behaves like a perfectly elastic body. Okay, so this region is termed as the region of proportionality, the linear region. The second important point in this context is elastic limit. What is elastic limit? If we increase the strain beyond this region of beyond this linear region, if we increase the strain, we see that now stress is no more linearly proportional to the strain. However, we see the wire is still elastic. For example, if we remove this load, the wire will still try to regain its original position. So it is still elastic, but there is a maximum value of the strain for which a body shows elastic property. This is known as elastic limit. What is elastic limit? The maximum value of a strain for which a body shows elastic property is called as elastic limit. Now, for example, if you take a rubber band, if you take a wire and you keep on increasing, then if you are applying a very high force, then there will be a permanent deformation in the wire. It will not come back to its original position, which means we have crossed the elastic limit. Okay. So after we have crossed the elastic limit, the body behaves like a plastic body. It no more tries to regain, it no more has any tendency to come back to its original position or original shape. Okay, so now what happens after elastic limit? When the wire is stretched beyond this elastic limit, the strain increases more rapidly and the body becomes plastic. Okay, it shows no tendency of reaching gaining its original position, original shape. This means that even if the deforming load is removed, the wire will not recover its original length. It will show some permanent deformation occurred in the wire. So this is known as permanent set or the permanent deformation in the wire. And no extension can be recovered, matlab it will not come back to its original length after you have removed the load. Beyond this, there is a breaking point. If you further increase the load, then beyond this, the strain increases very rapidly, and at a certain point, the length of the wire will increase continuously. Even without increasing the load, even if you are not increasing the load, the length of the wire increases continuously. This is known as breaking point or the fracture point in the graph. And the stress corresponding to which this breaking point is achieved is known as breaking stress. Okay, so there, if we try to understand the graph of If we try to analyze the graph of stress versus strain for a metallic curve, for a lengthy metallic curve which has got uniform cross section and that has been subjected to increasing load, then we see that there are number one, the elastic region, number two, the plastic region, and number three, the main points, the breaking point in the graph. So there is one more term associated with it that is known as tensile strength. It's a very important term. The stress corresponding to the breaking point, I told you, is termed as breaking stress, or this is known as the tensile strength. This tells you what is the tensile strength of the wire. So within the elastic limit, the maximum stress which an object can subject it to without breaking. That is the working stress. जितनी देर हम उसके साथ काम कर सकते हैं बिना damage हुए, बिना damage किए. That is known as working stress and the ratio between the working stress and the breaking stress is known as the factor of safety. So we should work well within the factor of safety if we are, for example, while making the cables of a lift, we should know what is the factor of safety so that we know how many people are allowed in this lift, how much load is allowed in this lift, which is carried by that particular cable of which we are calculating the factor of safety, of which we are calculating the breaking stress and the working stress. So this is about the stress strain curve for a metallic wire. Now, if we consider the stress strain curve of, say, a rubber kind of material, we were till now we were considering the stress strain curve for a metallic wire. Let me understand now the stress strain curve for a rubber-like material, and then we'll know the difference between. Then we'll clearly understand the difference between the elastic and the plastic material. So when we stretch a rubber cord, for example, we have a rubber cord and we stretch it. Say we stretch it a few times to its original length, natural length. Then we know that the rubber takes back its original position. This is not so evident in case of a metallic wire. Our daily life experience tells us that when we stretch a rubber, say double the length of a rubber, then it comes back to its original position. Even if we stretch the rubber to thrice of its original length, it will come back to its original position, and say four times and so on. So what does it tell you? It tells you that the elastic region is large and there is no defined plastic flow region for the rubber kind of material. So those substances which are having large strain, which can, which shows large strain, very large strain, they are known as elastomers. These are known as elastomers. And this property, this particular property, that when a material is going to be elastomer or not, this arises from the internal molecular arrangements inside that material. So the stress strain curve, if you try to plot for a rubber, this is going to be extremely completely different from that of a metallic wire. So you'll observe that there is no region of proportionality, number one. The first main difference, there will not be any region of proportionality. Second, when the deforming force is gradually reduced, the original curve is not retraced, which means a permanent deformation is set. When the deforming force is gradually reduced, the original curve is not retraced. Because when you have stretched it to a high value, to a large strain value, then some permanent deformations are already there. While increasing the load and while decreasing the load, the graph should have been overlapping, which happens for the case of metallic wire, but not for rubber kind of material. The work done by the material in returning to the original shape is less than the work done by the deforming force. That is why the curve does not retrace back when you gradually decrease the load. this difference of energy. What difference of energy? The work done by the material in returning to its original shape is less than the work done by the deforming force. So this difference in energy is absorbed by the material and it appears as heat. So you feel it. You feel it when you do this experiment with rubber, for example. If you stretch the rubber, the heat to a large extent, then after some time you'll feel that the rubber band has become hot. This phenomena is known as elastic hysteresis. So we have now understood the concept of elastic hysteresis, that the curve in increasing the load and the decreasing, and while decreasing the load, they do not overlap completely, and that is why this is known as elastic hysteresis. So we'll learn more about the elastic properties. We'll compare more about the elastic properties of steel and rubber in the next lecture, and then this will give us more intuition about the elastic properties of matter. Thank you.